Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of the city. It shall not be moved. God will help it when the morning dawns. The nations are in an uproar. The kingdoms totter. He utters his voice. The earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord. See what desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. But still, and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. This is the word of the Lord.
As I've mentioned before, I attended college in Chicago at Moody Bible Institute, and if you've never been in that area of Chicago, it's on the near north side, right in downtown area, so it's very noisy and it's very active. And I'll never forget, at the end of my first semester, I went home at Christmas, and my parents had moved while I was in college, but they did give me the address of where they moved to. So this is good. They had moved from Omaha, Nebraska, to a small town in northwest Iowa by the name of Spencer, Iowa. And so my break, when I came home at Christmas, I was going home to a new house. And Spencer was, or probably still is, a very quiet, small farming community. And I remember laying in bed for the first night when I got home, and my ears were ringing. And I could not sleep. Not so much because of the ringing, because it was so stinking quiet. It just was, and it took me days. For the rest of my time as a student, when I'd go home, it would take me days to get used to the quiet. But then the opposite would occur when I would go back to school, and the dorm was noisy, and even though I was on the fifth floor of a dorm, you could still hear street noise, and I'd lay there wide awake because now it was really too noisy. And one of the things that is very true about city living is that it is a noisy, busy place. In the last number of years that we lived there, we had a group of friends, other couples. All of us were incredibly busy, and we would plan things to do together months in advance, and I don't think any of those plans ever really happened. Inevitably, somebody's busyness would cause them to have to not be able to join us. And we found ourselves saying, my word, is this the life that we want to live, of just constant busyness? So then what did we do? We left a city of 3 million people. We moved to a small town in southwestern Pennsylvania, and thinking that, this is small town, people are not going to be busy. Boy, were we wrong. People were just as busy in this small little town in southwestern PA as they were in Chicago. The point of this is, I don't think I have to convince you that we live in an incredibly noisy, fast-paced culture that leaves us little time for quiet, for reflection, and probably most importantly, for restoration. Even when we think life is going well, when we think we are experiencing quiet and reflection and restoration, we have worries. Things that distract us, things that take away our peace. Now, on many of those days, If somebody suggested to us, hey, let's just escape society, let's go create some kind of commune, and let's just live a simple life, I think there, all of us have days where we would go, yep, sign me up. I'm ready to go do that. And yet, in John 17, when Jesus is praying for us in the prayer that is known as his high priestly prayer, he says this, my prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. As delightful as it sounds to escape, Jesus does not intend for us to escape, to be removed from this, but rather to be protected by Satan. Busyness, and we can define that very broadly, may be the thing that gives Satan a foothold in our life. It was psychiatrist C.G. Jung said, hurry is not of the devil, it is the devil. Busyness can occur all kinds of times. In those quiet moments when our mind is racing with worries and concerns, and it can occur in the actual physical busy times when life throws us curveballs and we're not ready. Psalm 46 is an incredibly encouraging psalm because it gives us insight into the character of God that I think can help us to not just maintain our sanity, but can help us to be still in the midst of whatever life is throwing our way. Let me give you a little background of the text. You may remember the story in 2 Kings 18, and I'll just stop right there, and in your minds, you're all going, oh, yeah, I remember that story in 2 Kings 18. Well, let me give you a few more details. Hezekiah was the king of the southern country of the two nations of Israel, Israel in the north, Judah in the south. Hezekiah was the king of Judah, and reform was in the air. He was in the process of tearing down idols and restoring worship to the way it God intended for worship to be. But they were at the same time, Judah was under the control of Assyria. And this reform also brought with it a rebellion on the part of King Hezekiah. Because, of course, if they're serving the one true God, they're not going to be subservient or serve some other person. So the result of that rebellion was the king of Assyria brought a huge army, surrounded Judah, and maintained a campaign to destroy them. And one of the ways that they did that is they spoke in the language of the people that were inside the walled city, and they began to give doubt to whether or not the God that Judah was serving was really the true God. In fact, saying things like, well, you know, your God told me to come and kill you. Now, by the way, that's not in the Hebrew. That's kind of the Perry, perversion of the Hebrew. But in essence, they got that message. And in fact, Hezekiah even said to the Assyrians, quit speaking in our language. I don't want people to hear. And they did that on purpose. So as you can imagine, here is a king and his people who are trying to do the right thing, and the result of that is an incredibly powerful nation who is intent on destroying them. So Hezekiah went before God and prayed for their deliverance, and God miraculously killed 185,000 troops without Judah having to do a single thing. And so it is believed that Psalm 46 is written in praise of that deliverance. So our question this morning is, what can we learn from this psalm that will help us in the midst of busy, difficult days to experience stillness? The first thing that we can see is that God is our refuge. Let me read for you again verses 1 through 3. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. God is a shelter. Another word for refuge in this passage is that he is a shelter, a refuge, a place to go to get out of the storm. In fact, it's really interesting. The verses 2 and 3 are all about water, right? And just this, it's really quite frightening. You know, though the waters roar and foam and the mountains quake, I mean, we know all we have to experience is a lot of rain in a short amount of time, and we can see the power that water has. And in this first few verses of the psalm, it's a very frightening picture of the power of water. Our most recent polar vortex can be frightening. Now, I think we overreacted, but nevertheless, it's frightening, right? The wind. This week we had a lot of wind, and I for some reason I hate going to bed and hearing the wind howling. I've never had a bad experience that I remember. Maybe I've repressed it, but I hate that sound. I hate it. And I think to myself, you know, in the daytime I could hear that same sound and it doesn't freak me out, but for whatever reason I hate it at night. There is much to be feared in our culture. We feel vulnerable all over the place. And I will readily admit that my field of media and journalism does not always help, because sometimes we pick up on things and add to people's fears. We need a shelter. The shelter, the psalmist says, is ever present. God is present with us. We talk a lot these days about being present with each other, which simply gets to the fact that we can be physically present, but either because of our phones or computers or TV or all kinds of distractions, our minds can be a million miles away. And we talk a lot about the need to be present for each other. So while God is not physically present, he is present. The thing is none of us feels a great deal of comfort when we are by ourselves, when we are alone. There is comfort with others. Now, I've mentioned before that I'm a cyclist, and one of the things that happens in the summer, and I try to prevent this from happening, is but occasionally I'm out riding, and all of a sudden I can see a storm moving in. Right now, I have never melted, and I have you know, a little bit of rain is not going to kill me, but I really don't like riding in the rain, and the primary reason is because my socks get really wet. So that's I know it's very bizarre, and I didn't need to share that, but I thought I would anyway. And so as I'm riding, and I may be 10 or 15 miles from home, and I can see the storm moving in, I'm thinking to myself, where do I go? Where do I take shelter? Would it not be really cool if I had some kind of shelter with me all the time? Some kind of like, you know, like Harry Potter had the invisibility cloak. Wouldn't it be cool if I could just pull something out and boom, I've got a shelter? And of course, that's ridiculous. And a friend of mine who's also a cyclist, I remember him telling me once he got caught in a really bad storm and he just pulled up to some random person's house and like stood on their porch because he needed a shelter. When we are in the midst of the difficulty of life, God is not only our refuge, our shelter, he is present with us right at this moment. And it's not like we have to wait for him, he is there. And in that moment, there is great comfort because we are not alone. God also is our security. Let me read verses 4 through 7. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. We encounter once again in these next few verses the word fortress, but in the Hebrew, this fortress is actually a totally different word. This time, in verse 7, when the psalmist says, he is our fortress, he means literally, he is our high, lofted, walled security. City-states were built with walls around them, but preferably up high, elevated in some kind of position where they could see the enemy approaching, that there was no surprise. And in that, it gave the city-state great security, great protection. God is our high, lofted fort. He is our security. It is Psalm 46, by the way, that inspired Martin Luther to write, "A mighty fortress is our God." So let me read to you some of the lyrics from that wonderful hymn. "A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. Our helper, he, amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing. For still our ancient foe doth seek to work us woe. His craft and power are great, and armed with cruel hate, on earth is not his equal. The word above all earthly powers, no thanks to them abideth. The spirit and the gifts are ours through him who with us sideth. Let goods and kindred go, this mortal life also. The body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever." We could probably say amen, close everything up and head on out, because we've been blessed just by the words of "A mighty fortress is our God." But I'm not going to do that. That would not be quite right. It is said that when Martin Luther would hear discouraging words, he would say, "Come, let us sing Psalm 46. God is our fortress, a highly lofted place of security. There is nothing to be afraid of." Finally, in this psalm, God is peace, verses 8 through 11. "Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, 'Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress.'" Probably to be more accurate, not only God is peace, but he is a peacemaker. The focus of this message is on the idea that is found in this last thing: "Be still and know that I am God." We get so busy that we simply don't take the time to know God, to take the time to recognize that he is our refuge. He's our fortress. He is our security. The challenge in this passage, I think, is to learn, to understand and learn what it means to be still. It is not going to bed and being asleep, because even in those moments, there are many of us that aren't very still. The Hebrew word from which "be still" is translated literally means to slacken, abate, cease, fail, let alone. Now, just looking at those words, that doesn't help me a whole lot to understand how do I become still. And so I looked up a bunch of the different passages in the Old Testament that use that word, and one passage in Song of Solomon really helped me to get to the meat, I think, of what the psalmist is getting at. In Song of Solomon, it says this: "Scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. I held him and would not let him go till I had brought him to my mother's house." The "not let him go" is the same Hebrew word that is translated "be still" in Psalm 46. And it is the contrast of "would not let him go" that I think helps us to understand what it means to be still. She who is talking would not let him go because she held on to him. When we are not still, it is because we hold on to things. We are really only going to be still when we let things go, when we let things drop, when we leave them alone. But we have to be honest. We kind of like holding on to our stuff. You know, it is often the case we come together as the church and we say, Let's leave our burdens here. And so we will pray, leaving the burdens. And as we leave, we think to ourselves, oop, forgot the burden, grabbed it and take it back. And for a few minutes, we may have let go of it, but we really like to hold on to our stuff because it sometimes gives us just a little bit of feeling of control. But it is in the holding of stuff we don't get to know God. So let me suggest that the way to let go, to let drop, must begin with times of quiet meditation. There's a book, it's been out for well over 20 years, by a man named Richard Foster. The book is called Celebration of Discipline. And it's a book basically about the various disciplines that the church has practiced over the history of the church. So one of the practices is that of meditation. And he gives some very practical tips on how we can learn to meditate and in the process of letting go. So it begins with, first of all, being in a quiet place. And then imagine that we are in the very presence of God. Now, one of the things I like to do is because I'm a sports fan, I like to think of it as almost like this big, huge gathering of thousands and thousands of people from all over that are part of the kingdom of God. And we're all in this hillside, and in the center is the throne of God, and we are awaiting his arrival. And I like to quiet myself and imagine, what would that be like? What would I be feeling knowing that God is going to walk in at any moment and take his place on the throne? But in the process, and one of the things that Richard Foster suggests, that as we're imagining, that we can do a couple of things. As we exhale in our breathing, we think to ourselves, release worry. Inhale, I want to experience his peace. Exhale, frustration. Inhale, joy. And you get the idea. Now, another thing he suggests is that this helps you more than the breathing is to do palms up and palms down. Palms down, we release the things that we're holding on to. Palms up, we're receiving the things that God wants to give us. And in the process, we are allowing God to speak to us. We are allowing ourselves to get to know him better. This takes practice. This takes practice, because the way the mind works is you think to yourself, I'm going to release worries. And then you think, oh yeah, this is what I'm worried about. And the next thing you know, you're thinking about all the things you're worried about, right? So it takes practice. And if you try this, I would encourage you, don't just do it once or twice. Be consistent at it. It's like any kind of thing we have to learn, we have to keep practicing. There will be good moments and there will be bad moments. But it is in that meditation that we can begin to let go, let drop, and be still. Hezekiah actually laid the letter out from the king of Assyria that was threatening Judah. He actually laid it out on the ground before he prayed. By doing that, he was letting go. Is there a physical thing that you can do to let go? Maybe it's write things on a piece of paper and then rip them up or put them in the shredder. Or if you have a fireplace, burn them in the fireplace to physically remind yourself, I'm getting rid of this worry. I'm getting rid of this care. I'm getting rid of all the chattering noise that is in my brain. The bottom line, as we are here together in this morning, is let's not forget Psalm 46. God is our refuge, he is our security, and he is our peace.
You have been listening to a podcast from Wabash Presbyterian Church. For more sermons and resources, please visit us at wabashpresbyterian.com.